Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And in this episode, I sit down with director, writer, producer, and now actor, Jay Duplass. Not all that long ago, Jay Duplass was broke, painfully aware of his numerous filmmaking failures, and pretty convinced he'd ruined everything in his life. But $3 and an answering machine taught him the most important lesson in filmmaking, one that film school never mentioned. It's one that led Jay and his brother Mark to one of the most successful careers in the business, or better put, outside the business. Their movies reflect not only their obsession with human beings and a knack for letting stories unfold organically, but how two artists held true to their own process. But after a hard-fought struggle to get to that point, and now in his 40s, Jay has discovered a new career, even though he's been looking right at it for nearly two decades. With almost no experience, he reluctantly signed on for a lead role on the hit show Transparent. It's a scary switch, but he says the most terrifying thing about it is how close it came to never happening. Jay's journey is chock full of inspiration, cautionary tales, and advice for anyone pursuing a creative career. But I think it leaves all of us with valuable ideas to ponder. Like, maybe we should all try to live a little more freely with our own emotions. And maybe losing a bit of control is actually good for us. Or as Jay says, make some art with your pants off. Or just listen to this conversation with your pants off. Just do it in the privacy of your own home. So pull up a chair, maybe put something down to cover it, and listen in. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Sam.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we've had a couple of couples, boyfriend, girlfriend, and husbands and wives on the show. But now you've completed my set of brothers, because we had your brother on about a year ago.
Yes.
And it was one of my favorite conversations because I love talking to artists that do so many different things. And, you know, the perspective you have on the work you do is so much greater because you've done so many aspects of the business, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And gosh, you started as an editor and a cameraman, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've directed, you've produced, you've written, now you're acting. I mean,
It's a lot of categories.
It's a lot of categories.
A lot of IMDb categories going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but like when you come from like the suburbs of New Orleans and you just have a brother and you make stuff, the making of stuff entails lots of categories.
Right.
Like Mark and I, we just make shit. I mean, that's all we're just like two cavemen who like think up stuff and we tell stories. Oh, that's cool. Let's make that, you know? So we were doing all those categories since we were, you know, teenagers,
right.
Younger than teenagers, you know, writing, executive producing, acting, shooting, editing, all those things. And we've just kind of like continued to make things. And now we have union designations and we have to like arbitrate credits for the WGA. Like you have to figure out exactly who wrote how much of what, and or all unions have all these specific designations, and I think they are important, but it's very weird to us because we're just like, no, we're just making this thing. And we just, I mean, when we first got on the set of studio films, we had to be told many, many times to stop touching things because we were like, you know, you're just gone and you're moving shit around. You're like, I just got to go over here. And you're like, there are very many people being offended right now. And we're like, what? We just want to make this thing.
Right. And then you think, oh, God, they're all looking at us like they don't know what they're doing. They're grabbing our stands.
Oh, yeah. We definitely did not know what we were doing. And we still, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, that, you know, what we have been doing in our lives and in our careers is like backing out of the studio system and moving back towards, hey, we're two dudes who make stuff. And now Duplass Brothers is not two guys. It's like this family of people that we have and we all make things. And, you know, when we got to that studio level, like the making things turned into having conversations.
Right.
And explaining yourself. And that creatively was so jarring to us, you know? First of all, you have to like justify and explain to studio heads, and I get it because they're giving you $10, $20 million, whatever they're giving you. I get it. But also you have your department heads and you got to explain things to them. And as you know, you're an artist, like explaining art is different from making art.
Very different. Very, you're selling different. When you're explaining.
You're selling. And when you are explaining, you are losing some of the art. I genuinely believe it. That is what people talk about. I mean, I try not to be too dramatic about it, but like that's what people are talking about when they're talking about like selling out or whatever, is because you have to like, you have to give so much of it away in the preparing of the making of the art.
What's a good example of when that, when you realized that?
Cyrus was our first studio movie. We did it at Fox Searchlight. They are the dream studio, or at least were, I think they still are, the dream studio of independent filmmakers. And, you know, we had made a few features, had gone to Sundance,
yeah.
Homemade movies like the Puffy Chair we made for $15,000. And we started writing a script with Fox Searchlight called Cyrus, and it was hell. It was really, really tough. I know you guys are not going to like this, and I'm saying it out loud, but I mean, you're not supposed to say this stuff, but it really was tough on us. It was, we had to explain to that studio exactly why we were doing what we were doing. And we got it done. And the fact that there were, Mark and I were doing it together and we were supporting each other throughout the process helped us get through it, and we ultimately made exactly the movie we wanted to make, but we almost like died in the process of doing it.
Was that a shock to you?
Yeah, it was shocking. I mean, it wasn't, these are nice people. Let me be clear. These are very nice people who are just doing what people do and have been doing forever in terms of making studio movies. But for us, being two guys who like come from the heart and just are like discovering things as we go, there are so many elements of the process of discovery in art making that can't happen when things get nailed down so hard. And you know, when you're on set and there's been arbitration about a scene for months and months, and you get on set and you're like, the blender doesn't work. but this is cool because like he's punching the blender buttons, and it's like, that's what the scene is. That's actually better than what we thought of. But there's been like 6 months of arbitration about that scene. You can't just go with that thing, or you're not supposed to.
Right.
But we can't not go with that thing.
Right.
You know, and we're like very responsible Catholic boys. I mean, I want to make people happy. I want people to, I don't call them the man or whatever. It's just the process, the very intellectualized and analyzed process of making art is not, it's not for me.
You know, it's funny because looking into your sort of, you know, the chronology of you and your brother's career,
yeah,
you had to make your own breakthrough to figure out who you were as filmmakers.
Yeah.
And then you had to convince others that you could do it your way, or you had to invent your own system.
Yeah. You have to you have to learn how to articulate the culture of how you make things.
Right.
You have to, first of all, you have to stumble upon the discovery, and for us it was very much a stumble. It was a $3 movie that we made accidentally.
Yeah, tell me about
that. Was almost documentary style. Well, we were trying to be the Coen brothers for a very long time, because in the early 90s, mid 90s, when I was in film school, that's who everybody wanted to be. And we tried really hard, and we failed at doing that, because they're the Coen brothers, and they're very, very good at being the Coen brothers, and they're so unique in what they do and execute. And I was like approaching 30, and we had made many failed films, and I was losing my mind. I was like, I can't put myself through this anymore. I can't put my parents through this anymore. My friends, like, we had come from, like, Catholic prep school, and all of our friends were, like, successful, and they were starting to have families, and I was just, like, living on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, living south, deep south Austin, making $17,000 a year. And Mark was with me, and he said, we're going to make a movie today. Today we're going to make a movie. And I was like, no, we can't make a movie. We don't have a 16-millimeter camera. This is where we were coming from. This is like 2002.
But how was that inclination opposite from what she'd been doing for the past year?
The big difference was we were reduced to absolutely nothing, to rubble as human beings. We had no ideas anymore. All we had were ourselves. And so Mark said, we're going to make a movie today, and you're going to come up with the idea, and I'm going to get a tape. So he went to 7-Eleven, got a tape, and I was like, well, we have a living room and a kitchen and a bedroom. That's what we have. And we have this thing that happened to me a few weeks back when we were casting that movie that we were trying to do, where I was trying to leave a long casting message on my answering machine, the outgoing message of my answering machine. And it took me literally like 20 or 30 tries, and I had pretty much a nervous breakdown when it happened, you know? And then like Mark and I privately, we were like cringed. We're like, oh God, this is so typical. And then we would start to giggle about it a little bit, you know, like in the way that we did privately, but we had not shared with anybody else. And so Mark was like, okay, that's great. I'm going to improvise this. And we did this whole improvised 20-minute film, and we cut it down to 7 minutes. And it was so us. It was just, it. Now I know that it's what we uniquely had to offer the world.
How do you think you stumbled on it?
It was just hitting rock bottom creatively. It was almost like analogous to someone getting sober or just someone hitting rock bottom and just being like, I can't fake it. I can't use drugs. I can't drink. It really was accidental in that way. It was just like we reached the end of trying.
Where was your mindset then? Were you thinking of what else can I be doing, or maybe I'll be an editor? I mean, how did you feel about your own talent at that point?
Oh, I was a piece of shit. I did not have any confidence that I could make anything great. And I mean, I think maybe that was the only asset I had at the time, because you know, I do notice a lot of young filmmakers, they're not aware that their shit stinks so far, you know, but I was painfully aware of how bad everything was. And so I was a mess. I mean, I was really like, because I was, you know, I was like summa cum laude, you know, type student, you know, like I could have done anything. And here I was like about to hit 30, and I just was like, I've ruined everything.
Numbers wise, scripts, shorts, movies, how many would you say you failed at before hitting on this little $3 film?
I mean, probably 20, 30, honestly. Like, I'm talking like concerted beginning to end.
Casting,
writing, editing, the whole thing. A lot of other, like, sort of playful projects along the way. Made three features.
Three. You and Mark have done a good job of scrubbing the internet of those attempts. I mean, I can't find Vince Del Rio
Vince
anywhere.
Del Rio is only screening in the basement of my mother's house.
but this is a film that you dumped a lot of money into, and it was a big, you took a big swing with that,
took
where you and
swing.
Your brother made some money. The story goes, what, you
yeah,
made some money on
it. Yeah, we shot and edited this documentary for a startup in Austin called Garden.com, and we made a chunk of change. And because we were living on $17,000 a year in peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, we took essentially our gross earnings, which was $75,000. At the time, that was just like the most money we could ever imagine. And we put all that money into Vince Del Rio. And it was so bad. We knew it wasn't reaching our potential. I don't know why it took so long to find our thing. We never had an articulation in our mind. No one in film school or anywhere in the world says the hardest thing to do as an artist is to figure out who you are and what you uniquely have to offer the world. That one sentence is better than all film schools.
Yeah.
It's real hard to do. Really, really, really hard. And people should at least have some articulation about it. We had none. We just knew what we liked, and we were just trying here and there. And I think there are so many things that can go wrong in filmmaking that can just make a movie mediocre. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to make a mediocre movie.
How did you guys talk about failure with each other? Like how did it sort of, when something wasn't working, how did you either console each other or...
We know each other so well that we don't have to discuss it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's so obvious. Well, that's also, like, part of our, like, storytelling process. It's like, the true beginning of storytelling or of Mark and me making a movie is me telling Mark a story. And if I tell him a story and I see in his eyes that they light up, we have something. And if they are not lighting up or if he's looking another way, I know I don't have anything.
And does that go both ways?
Yeah, it goes both ways. Or his eyes won't light up and I'll change the story a little bit and I got him, you know? So it's like twin speech. I mean, our communication is like nonverbal. There are times where we have to have a sit down and have like an articulation about what's going on.
Right.
It's weird to know someone so well your whole life and to come from the same source and to be in constant relationship with them. It's very unusual. I mean, people are like, how can you work with your brother? Yes, that's tipping the iceberg of it. The truth is like, I'm married to my brother and we have a marriage that comes from the same place. And so with, say, a spouse, they're coming from a different family of origin and there's like things to learn and things to be brought. We're coming from the same origin and it is really...
You have the same mirror.
We have the same mirror.
Yeah.
And we mirror each other and sometimes we limit each other's growth because it's like, hey, dude, I know who the fuck you are. Don't do that shit, you know?
Whereas like someone else may not know that,
they don't
and
know.
So you're free to explore that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like Mark and I, at parties, if Mark's at a party and I walk in, I'm just like, well, I should probably just go now because he's already doing my stuff.
He's doing all your material.
He's doing all my, we all the same material. No, I mean, it is weird in general to show up at a party and to have everybody say, where's your brother?
Right.
I mean, the statement is, you are half a person. We would like your brother to be here as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the fact that you interviewed us separately a year apart, honestly, is like a joy.
Well, we just didn't find a third one of these chairs.
That's what, okay.
The only thing.
Okay, I got it. But yeah, if Mark was sitting here right now, I would be like waiting to see what he's going to say. And he would be waiting to see what I'm going to say. And we've heard it a lot.
Yeah, no, I bet. But I also would surmise that maybe you two kept each other from quitting, too. I mean, is there...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I would say by far it's been goodness, you know. We kept each other from quitting. We supported each other. As you know, when you make a movie is like a giant evil monster that threatens to destroy you and everything in your life.
Yes.
And
yes.
I feel it from you. And when you have your brother next to you who comes from that same place of origin, who gets everything, who you trust to make decisions about everything, it really takes what I believe is a somewhat inhumane task, like directing a movie is like not a very humane activity in terms of what's demanded of you. You are the fulcrum of everything that happens creatively, emotionally, intellectually, physically. Like you have to like absorb pain.
Oh, and if you say what you're really thinking at a given moment, which is, I don't have that answer. I don't want to make that decision. I would like you to make some of those decisions.
Yeah.
Then you are seen
as weak.
Yeah, exactly. I think you see a lot of people trying to replicate that by having writing partners or by having producing partners, but it's different, right?
It's different because you can't fire your brother.
Right.
They're going to be there. And it's as wonderful as that sounds, and it's as awful as you might imagine the flip side of it is. Because, you know, I mean, I think truthfully, is like Mark and I have like cannibalized a lot of our brotherhood and friendship to create great art.
Using that, like, literally at the expense of...
At the expense of our soulmate relationship. And it's hard. I mean, it's really hard. It's hard to, you know... Yeah, it's just... It's terribly wonderful.
What was the closest you guys ever came to hanging it up? Or a conversation of maybe there's other things. I mean, was there a moment that stands out?
Yeah, I mean, it was right before we made that short film called This Is John about the answering machine. I mean, honestly, I was at the end. You know, I was just like, I think I need to go to grad school, you know?
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm just going to... Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Grad school was always there. Like, I was going to be a psychologist. Like, that was going to be my thing. I had, like...
You kind of look like a psychologist.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it with actors every day.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing it... I mean, that... A big part of directing is being comfortable within extremely uncomfortable situations.
Yeah.
You know? Like... When Melanie Lynskey is in our TV show Togetherness, and she's committing to be like sort of like the emotional center of the show and go through all this stuff, it's not just a job. It's like some calling that she has. And then also to shepherd like all the viewers' emotions through it. And my brother and me too. You know, like that show represents like an evolution and some kind of like churning of like this journey we're on, you know,
yeah.
I hate that word, but it's real, you know?
No, what I hear you saying is that if you're going to make art, you're going to have to live that art. And, and you know, it makes me think, like, whenever you see a piece of art that connects, you know that whoever made that art was chewing on some problem for 6 months previous to when that started.
Yeah. I mean, Mark and I had just come through that period in our lives, very specifically being... right at 40 and having young children, and then we started talking about it with our friends, and it turned out everyone's like, I don't even understand what just happened to me. I just went to war. I don't know who I am anymore. And then our single friends like heard us talking about this, and they were like, oh, wait, I'm sorry. We thought you had it figured out. We thought you had it all. You have a house and you have children and you have a spouse.
You're the adults.
And they were jealous. They were so jealous of us. And then they realized, like, how just devastated we were by that. And we were jealous of them because they could go to a fucking movie anytime
exactly.
they want. You mean to tell me you can open the front door to your home and just walk out at any point in time? I mean, you have children. You know what that's like. That's when you have kids, that's the dream.
I can't remember the last time I woke up because I woke up.
Dude, that is so for real. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I can't remember the last
time. No, I've never just woken up of my own volition.
No.
A child is stomping on my genitals is a reason why I wake up. That's one of many reasons
exactly.
why I wake up.
Yeah.
Usually it's just an alarm to wake other people up and get the day going. But yeah, they were jealous of us and we were jealous of them. And then Mark and I were like, I think we were flirting with a movie at the time, and then when we started realizing how big it was, we're like, holy shit, this is a show. This is not a movie. This goes on.
Yeah.
This doesn't end, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I think about that, it's a huge idea. So I guess it would be a good time to ask you about an idea's validity and how one goes from something you're chewing on into this is what we're going to sit down and pour ourselves into. And I guess I'm just curious about that process for you.
I mean, it just depends. If I have an idea and I'm at home and I'm with my wife, I'll just be like, can I have 2 minutes of your time? Because there's a lot of this, you know? I'm just like, can I just tell you a story? And I'm just going to like, and I don't ask for feedback. I just want to tell her a story.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And if she wants to give me feedback, she can. But like, I'm not looking, I just need to say it, you know? But usually it's Mark, and usually it's just a notion. And then it will continue. And I guess the thing that's unmanageable about it is that this is a lifetime of conversations. I mean, you know, this is like, remember when Brant Pratt in 1979 did that thing? Yeah, I mean, you know, and because he, like I was saying, we come from that same point of origin, because he knows the whole context of the suburban New Orleans neighborhood in 1979 and like what Brant was going through with his family, you know,
right?
There's all this stuff. So there's like potential energy in there, and there's less explaining.
You don't have to draw the world to make it significant.
No.
So he can understand.
Well, this is huge because I just learned something. Is like, I don't have to explain it to him. I can like present the potential energies to him, and like, and so he will be like, oh yeah, wow, that's something. That's like what we talk about on a daily basis, our friends, our family, our parents, our relatives, the really mysterious and amazing or passive-aggressive things that they're doing in a loving way, because humans are so fucked up and so funny.
Yeah.
And so desperate.
God, you know, you say that, and I think of your films and your TV, and I think that's true. You're obsessed with human beings. Mm-hmm. But what is the key to, like, so say you in the case of your buddy when you grew up in the 70s, There's the story, but then there's, what is the movie really about, though?
How does this fit and change?
Yeah,
Absolutely.
How do you do that part?
I don't know.
Well, that doesn't help anybody.
I have no idea how we do that.
Do you sometimes not know the theme till later?
Oh, yeah, you don't figure out what you're doing until way later.
So you can start writing a story without knowing?
Oh, yeah, no, you just want to see things happen. I mean, the rule is, what do you want to see next? That's the only rule. I mean, that is like the impetus always, is like, what do you want to see next? Obviously, movies have structures and they have themes and they have all this stuff, but like, honestly, I don't figure out what I'm doing until I'm like talking to someone like you about it for the first time.
Are you someone that gets clarity in thoughts by talking?
Yeah. Yeah, drives my wife nuts.
I'm the same way, though. I don't know how people organize their thoughts without hearing them out loud, because it's a discipline thing. Until you have to put words to a thought, then it's just, maybe that's a creative thing. Maybe creative people can have thoughts that aren't really words, you know?
I'm a writer, too. Like, I'm a journaler, and that is a big part of me unfolding thoughts and stuff, like things that happen. But I do have to talk things out and to hear them and constantly change them and evolve them. I mean, like, oh, to answer your question, I think better about, like, how does it happen? It's really listening. It's like you give the thought to the world, to my brother, to my wife, to friends. You listen to their feedback. You listen to the idea of what it wants to be. It's like getting out of the way of it as much as possible, because I think that's another thing that, you know, you mentioned earlier about how directors in particular are expected to be authoritarian, and like Mark and I do not work that way. And I think the fact that there's two of us and there's not like one brain changes the way that we look at art making. It's like we are not trying to like execute like some exacted thing that we envisioned one time, you know? It's like the world is changing. He and I are changing. These actors are not exactly the actors we thought we would get, or they are, and they're different people now. Like, actors are in moods. They have moods and shit, you know? And so we're just, like, all the elements, and we're just trying to, like, funnel it and make lightning strike and then, like, shoot it inside of a camera, like, put it in the camera, you know? And we're very pragmatic about it in that way. It's just like, well, that dude's in a real bad mood. He's supposed to be peppy. If we try and make him peppy, it's going to be creepy as fuck. But the cool thing is, you know, when you're alone, all those ideas go on in your head. But I can tell Mark that. I can just be like, look, I just had a talk with him in his trailer. He's in a weird-ass place. And Mark's like, well, yeah, that'll be creepy as fuck if we try and make him be Peppy. And I'm like, what if we let him be creepy Peppy? And we let the other characters acknowledge that he's acting Peppy and he's full of shit. And then all of a sudden you're like, that is fascinating. And then you get an actor on set and you're like, sorry you feel like shit. Fake it till you make it, bro. And then all of a sudden you have a real thing happening.
Right, because you can't take the real out of it.
You can't.
But it's funny you're saying this, and then I think back to your Cyrus experience.
I was just thinking that too.
Where you can't do that.
Yeah, but we did it. We just did it, and we just had to suffer for it.
Right.
You know, the disappointment, the fear, you know, on all sides.
You know, Mark said something when he was here. He said that you've made this policy of make movies, not meetings. And mm-hmm. And I wonder if after your two studio experiences, if it sort of solidified this idea that you're going to have to figure out a way to work the industry into the way you work rather than the other way around.
That's exactly it. We just backed out of the industry. We make our own things and then we sell it to them after the fact. That's the most reductive version of what we
do.
I mean, here's a small microcosm of it. It's like the first year, we not only took meetings the first year in LA, we read scripts.
That's from what
other
you do. People.
You read other scripts.
Yeah.
And they're all terrible. They're all terrible, the scripts that are floating around in Hollywood. And the ones that are good, you know.
You never see them.
Bennett Miller is the only one who's seeing those scripts. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You're not going to see those scripts. And we realized, like, with all the energy we're taking reading scripts, why don't we just write two of our own? Maybe one day get paid for them and then have movies to make. And that's a small microcosm for what we do in pretty much every category of filmmaking. And we don't do anything that doesn't lead towards making a movie.
Yeah.
Like when we're working on something, it's going to happen. It might happen at a $100,000 level. I mean, early on when we were pitching our independent films, we were like, we'd love to make this with you guys, but just know that this will be made in August. We're shooting this on August 7th. And we are prepared to scale it down to $50,000 and do it ourselves if we have to do that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you can start to get an idea of how cheaply that could possibly be made. You make a movie with eight people that takes 15 days to make and it's made in a location that is a house that's easily rentable. That's not very expensive at all. And then all of a sudden you take it to Sundance and you sell the movie for $2 million and all the people on the crew had significant points in the movie and they made twice as much money as they would have made had they made it at a studio. And they were way happier doing it.
Don't tell anybody.
Don't tell. Shh.
Well, okay, so I got to change gears a little bit because mm-hmm. I'm fascinated with what's happened to you over the last few years. Terms of an acting career.
I'm like about to get shy right now.
Really?
Well, it's new.
Yeah.
It's
well,
weird to have to be in midlife and to have a whole other career because acting to me is so different.
I was thinking about that. You know, I've watched it recently. I've seen all of Transparent, which is amazing show. And it's like you're doing this on a level that people spend years auditioning to get to. And on top of that, the learning curve for you has been so steep. Like, it's amazing at an age when you've had this hard-fought success in filmmaking. Like, you fought for it, right? And
almost
got
died.
Here. I mean, are you feeling like an actor and feeling like that's where the excitement of learning is?
Yeah. It's overwhelming to me, really, that I'm an actor now. But the best way that I can say it is that I am definitely the person in my family where everybody's like, can you please stop having so many emotions because you're making us uncomfortable?
Now, are you talking about as a kid or now in your
Always,
current family?
Mostly as a kid. But I'm just a very open, emotional person. Like, I don't really, I mean, just what I'm known in our world. You know, like I saw Mark's interview with you recently, and Mark was like, Jay is a much more vulnerable person in the world than I am. And I like teared up because it was like nice to hear him say that about me. But it's also like markedly true. Like I'm just like a very porous person. And so for me, writing and directing has been hard fought for me, especially producing, because I'm just like a very emotional person. Like, but I had to do all those things, and like holding a universe in my arms, which is what you do as a writer, director, producer, is like not natural to me. It's like it's something I can do, and I can do it with my brother, and I've gotten really good at it, I think, on some level. But like being an actor and being like a emotional being is like weirdly what I have meant to do. And I feel that now. I can barely talk about it. I'm like just articulating this for the first time, you know?
You know, I saw these videos online recently of people who get to hear for the first time. And they film these people when they get the implant, and all of a sudden their face lights up like they can hear.
I saw that doc. It's great.
You did?
Yeah. The cochlear ear doc.
Yeah. And what I hear you saying is kind of like that. Like you didn't know that the whole time there was this other...
There's this whole other world going on.
That you fit into.
Right on the other side of that glass that I'm made for, I think.
And yet you were sitting there directing those people.
Yeah.
When did the curiosity for acting, like, when did that little voice, because it's funny to me.
I'm so dumb, Sam. I'm so dumb. It's the same as the directing and finding my voice thing. It never occurred to me.
When you told Mark the story of, I almost had a nervous breakdown while recording an outgoing message, and he goes, great, I'll act that out.
Yeah.
Like, in your head, did you go...
Never.
Let me do it.
Never occurred to me. Never, ever occurred to me. And I don't know what it is. I'm like, I maybe don't have a certain awareness about myself. I don't know what it is, but this is freaking me out right now just to even talk about it because, I mean, I think it, look, I've always made things and done things, and I've certainly put on plays at our parents' house and like did that fun stuff, you know, and played in bands and all that stuff. But I think probably early on, like, the exposure to acting was, like, theater,
yeah,
you know? And our high school was a big theater high school, musicals, like, big show tunes, like, ta-da-da-da-da, look at me, you know what I mean? And, like, theater guys and girls were just, like, annoying to me. They were, like, so, I want attention, you know? And the truth is like, it was just not attractive to me in any way. And what I am only now realizing is that I kind of like slipped in. I'm like a shy person in general, and I don't like attention. And I'm not saying that to be falsely modest. Like, I like looking at other people. I'm actually having a weird time being like minimally famous right now because other people are watching me now, and it's weird.
Right.
And I don't want to be seen. I don't want to be observed at the grocery store with my children. I'm a voyeur. You know, but what I have learned and what Jill Soloway has helped me with too is like, you know, that it's interesting. There aren't. It's interesting to be an actor who is private, very private. You know, and that's what Jill has articulated that she loves about what I do in our work is like there's no attention seeking in it. You know. And it is somewhat, I guess I got lucky. You know, Jill said to me, I want you to do this. I see this in you and I want you to do it. And I was pretty resistant to doing it at first.
Right, transparent. You have to go through some serious,
terrifying.
When you think about, you know, in 1-2 episode arc, you have your first relationship with a trans woman and you convert to Christianity. Like that's not something, you know, where, I mean, I would think no matter how confident you are or how understanding of the story you are, I would think to be on the other side, there's a whole different level of learning to trust yourself that whatever it is you're trying to do is it's getting through to the audience, or you trust that that's working.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Dude, I want to talk to you about it. That's so beautiful. What you're asking is so beautiful, and I just want to say that, like, Jill felt something energetically in me that needed to do these things.
When she said, it's you.
It's you.
When she said, you're the guy, way deep down inside, were you like, this is crazy? Were you like, yeah, I know. I know I'm the guy.
I did.
You did.
I said, no, I'm making my own TV show. I can't do it. I'm not an actor. I'm only an eighth Jewish. I'm all these things. And then and deep down inside, I was like, I think this is something. I think this is something.
You recognized it then.
Yeah, very deep inside. And, you know, that whole thing about, like, the enormous emotional turmoil that I go through is, like, things that Jill senses in me that need to come out.
Is it like, in a way, being seen?
Yeah.
Or broaden your own boundaries?
That's exactly what it is. It's like, Jill is, look, Jill casts me and Amy and Gabby in particular. We all have, all four of us have incredibly close relationships with our siblings, almost soulmate-ish, like Mark and I have. She didn't know that when she was casting us, but she could, like, feel it energetically. It's so much bigger than what's on screen, and that's why what's on screen, I think, is electric, is because, I mean, like, the relationship that I have with Gabby and Amy, my sisters on the show, is weird. We rely on each other to support each other through our real lives and our real families, and also our TV lives and TV families.
It's so funny because, you know, I think of your wife. I think of, like, okay, when I married Jay.
Oh, dude.
I bought into the fact that he and his brother have this weird thing.
Yes.
But she married a filmmaker.
She did.
And now she's married to an actor.
Who plays a sex addict on a TV show and has lots of it on TV.
And is having a lot of intimate conversations with his co-stars about life.
It's so weird, but okay. The major thing that was going on is that I was resisting being in the show because I was making my own show and I was terrified of making togetherness and all the work that was ahead of me.
Right.
And also, because of logistical reasons, it was very hard for Amazon to want to greenlight me to be in their show, and rightly so.
Because obviously you're working on the show.
They were in second position to me, working on my HBO show. And it was dangerous for them to say that. And Jill went to bat for me, and she said, this happened later, I didn't know about this, but she said, I cannot promise you the television show that you want from me if you don't let me hire Jay Duplass, who has never acted before. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
But
that would terrify me. Like, even having, a sense of the fact that obviously there's a gamble here.
There's a huge gamble on me, and I didn't want the
pressure. I would walk in, and I would feel like all these other actors are looking like, yeah, we've done the work for 20 years, and he's coming in.
Oh yeah, I was just like, I can't pretend to carry this deal or any of it. But there was a very defining moment where. Amazon, incredible people, but they made it pretty clear that just, like, it's bad news. Like, to the risk they would have to take to put me in the show was a risk that no other network would have taken, honestly, hands down. And I was supposed to come in for the, I don't know what they're even called, the network test.
Uh-huh.
I don't know these things because I'm not an actor, you know, or I wasn't. And I just felt like the whole thing was kind of against me and that it was going to avalanche my TV show at HBO. I was like, Jill, I just don't want to do it. I don't want to come in and do this very stressful network test for something that, like, doesn't feel like it's in the cards. And she, she's amazing in this way. She said, why are you getting caught up in all these fucking ideas about what contract, things that are in contracts? She's like, you and I want to make art together, right? And I said, yeah. And she said, why don't you come in and make some art with me? And that's all it'll be. And then she and Gabby, she was with Gabby, and they got on the phone, and Gabby got on the phone, and she said, we're going to sing to you until you come in to this network test. This is like, I mean, 30 minutes before the network test. And they're on the phone with me, and they were making up, like, songs like they were 9 years old. They were like, Jay, you gotta come to the test. You gotta be in a show with us. I mean, that is how this thing is made. That's how Transparent is made, period, and continues to be made. And I went into the test, and we did the barbecue eating scene from the pilot, and I and Gabby and Amy and I were ripping into each other and making each other laugh and improvising the whole time. And it was electric. It was lightning struck at the table. And I looked over at Jill when it was over, and she looked back at me like, who are you to deny this, like, thing that is happening?
I'm going to be in your TV show.
I'm going to. Yeah.
Wow. So, God, I can't help but think, like, you know, I mean, there's certainly the question of, is this your calling? And because it's your calling, you couldn't screw it up, and you felt comfortable doing it, and
yeah,
it all worked despite all of the things again. All because
the, yeah, all the impossibilities.
You're
yeah.
really good.
Thanks. I mean, I don't know. I know this. I love it. I feel good doing it. And my dad used to always, like, tell this story. You know, he would always, like, we'd watch sports when we were kids, and he was like, you know when there's, like, 6 seconds on the clock in basketball?
Yeah.
And there's the one guy, like, in Hoosiers who's like, give me the ball. I want the ball. And in every situation in my life prior to this, I've kind of been like, I don't want the ball. You know? It's fucking terrifying. You know, like when I was in Little League and I was 11 years old and, like, there was only one, it was two outs and I was up at bat, I was just like, kill me. Please. If I could teleport at this moment, I would teleport back to Nintendo in my living room. But acting is the first time where I'm just like, I want the ball. Give me the ball. And it is scary. I mean, the first few times I had hard-hitting scenes with Jeffrey Tambor, I was scared, but excited, and I still wanted the ball, and it's, I still kind of can't believe it.
God,
that it happened. It's almost terrifying to me because I love it so much, and it feels so natural to me. It's almost didn't find it.
Yeah.
It happened. It had to happen to me.
Well, you found it when you were 40 or 41. Yeah. It's amazing to me. You know, and I can't help but think of your brother sort of being the de facto actor in the Duplass Brothers traveling filmmaking show, right?
Like, yeah.
Do you think that that's one of those things where you never really questioned the roles you guys took on?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because those roles have been ingrained since we were kids, you know? Like, I would engineer things because I was older. That's it. Because it's just too hard to make a five-year-old try and operate a camera and pull focus. And, you know, you can do that when you're nine, but you can't do it when you're five, you know?
Or maybe even back further where you have the younger brother, so it's like, well, you eat it.
Absolutely, you eat it. Or, like, even making a clubhouse. I'm more interested in building it, and he's more interested in playing inside of it. The weird thing is that as we've gotten older, Mark is more of an architect by nature. He is a builder, and all I want to do is act. I mean, it's just, it's the most fulfilling thing in the world to me.
And why do you think that is? I mean, it, you know, because it's funny. I think about a friend of mine who's a very big actor for a long time, and he wanted to just give it up to direct, and his point being that I want to tell the story, not just be a piece in someone else's story.
Yes.
And you've had the reverse path.
It's a very unusual, I feel like there's like a herd of actors walking over to the director's side, and I'm the one director who's like,
excuse me,
any jobs over here that you've had abandoned?
Yeah.
It is very unusual. I mean, I don't know why. I do know this. It's like my emotionality is something that like I need to exercise, and it helps me to do it. I do feel that like I function better with less control. And that's a very unusual thing, especially for like middle-aged men. But like I think a lot of actors are looking for some control because they
haven't had it.
They haven't had it. And they
also, they've been at the mercy of going to an audition and having been picked. And they want to do the picking.
They want to do the picking. I haven't had to deal with any of that. I am so lucky, and I don't take for granted that I slipped in sideways to an incredible show created by incredible human beings that happens to also be at the forefront of a civil rights movement that I believe in deeply. And they pay really well, and it's in my neighborhood. It's a joke. It's a freaking joke.
It's true.
You know?
I mean, the neighborhood is just like, that's when you want to, you know,
that's
hate
when
you.
My actor friends just want to come over and just, like, sweep the leg. You know what I mean? Like, they deserve to sweep my leg. They, you
all
know,
those
cut
other
the
things,
Achilles.
You should have to go to, like, Puerto Rico to film it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. At least have to go to Puerto Rico. But, yeah, I think maybe lack of control is attractive to me. That sense of being in the moment, that anything could happen in this moment, it's not just that I enjoy it, but it's like good for me.
It makes me wonder, you know, being able to observe your other profession from the other side, to be able to watch other directors, to be able to see.
Oh, yeah.
Almost to be able to go across into enemy lines and find out what actors perspective is as a collective about the crew and the director.
I have sat down with a couple of actors and I have told them straight up what these people are going through on the other side of this is it's a lot. And I know that you may be taking this personally, but you can take it from me that this one issue that you're having is a hundredth of this person's day over there on that other side. And I've done that to provide comfort. But in a harsher, more interview environment, I can honestly say that I think a lot of actors think that acting is like half of the job or two-thirds of the job of being a director. And I'm here to tell them that it is 1/50th of the job of being a director, just in terms of man hours and the challenge that is upon you, you know? Like, directors don't have free time. You don't get to go back to your trailer. A director would kill to be sent to a trailer for 2 hours to chill, you know? On the other side of things, and this isn't super new, but because I've always felt this way, just being like a super vulnerable, emotional person, is an actor's process is an undefinable, weird thing, and you have to let them have their whatever it is, their conniption fits or whatever it is.
And it's not something that the director necessarily needs to know.
They
but
don't
they
need
to respect
know.
It.
They need to respect it. It's not knowable. It's not measurable. But you know, I can see it in other projects, but you know, that respect for what actors need to do to create magic in the most false set of circumstances you could possibly imagine. I mean, a movie set is the most stilted, weird-ass place to like go and have an emotional breakdown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird. It's so weird to do that. If you think about it too much, it can drive you crazy, you know? So you gotta like create that space for them to do it. And I mean, like, I have so much respect for actors and what they create, you know? I mean, just if they can do it, they can do it. Allow them their process.
The hardest part to understand would be knowing how to commit fully to a set of emotions that make up a person different from yourself and still find enough raw material that's true to you to make those connections feel real to you so that you can then do it. Like, have you struggled with that or found a way to get to those emotions without core judgment about yourself?
Yes. I can always refer back to myself as a director, and what I have told my actors and what I tell myself is your job is not to be perfect or to nail anything. Your job is to be real and vulnerable and emotional and whatever comes to you in this moment. Because if you're doing that, it's going to be profound. And it's my job as a director to make sure that that makes sense. And so that level of disobligation, I have found in my directorial work to be the only thing that matters, truly. I mean, there's lots of little directions you give to people. Hey, how about you just pick that thing up? It might pick, you know, whatever. But that intense level of disobligation is, in my experience, what allows all the childhood things to come up. And, you know, to fall on your face or whatever it may be. And I do that for myself. I disobligate myself from having to be anything other than, like, what I feel. So I let the script and the clothes and the vernacular and the dialogue dictate the character. But my goal is that all of the emotions are 100% pure and real to who I am, with no limits and no caps and no spin. Because what I have observed in other actors is when they do that or they make it too character-y, it becomes diminished. And so I guess, like, the emotion has to be 100% full, which is a big intellectualization on our set, especially, like, in Transparent. It's just, like, known.
God, but it's... I mean, in terms of the art you're making or the thing you're creating, an experience like that has to be the closest thing to what we as children identified as art.
That's it. I mean, Jill talks about it as we need to return to the place where we're making art with no pants on. You know how our kids, like, wake up in the morning and they're wearing, like, a shirt and no pants, and they're just, like, coloring on the ground, and you're like, that's like Jill's articulation of where we're supposed to be.
Well, it's clear to me that I'm speaking to an actor through and through, and that you believe it. You believe in the power of it, and you believe in the, you know, the necessity of being true to those things. And it's amazing to talk to a director who has that much capacity for the actor side of it. In terms of, you know, it's not just moving pieces to make a story work and manipulations. There's got to be real things there. And I feel like it's amazing that I'm talking to someone that's through and through an actor that has had the directing and writing career that you've had. And it just gives me such a sense of excitement about making things. And talking to you is it's like I could do it all day.
Oh, man.
And I love talking to you, and I hate that we have to stop.
Thank you for being so thoughtful and doing all your homework and letting me talk about myself. I feel like I owe you a therapy fee.
No, that's what... no.
My dream, and we thought about it for a while, is a documentary about people in therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing more that I would want to watch than people, like, spilling themselves and figuring out how to get tools to, like, clean up their lives.
Well, it goes along with being obsessed with human beings.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very obsessed with you and your brother, and thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Hey folks, that's our show for today. Those Duplass brothers are quite inspiring, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And if you haven't had the chance yet to listen to Jay's brother, Mark Duplass's episode, go to offcamera.com and check it out. Better yet, get the Off Camera monthly subscription. For just $4.99, you can have access to every show we've ever done. That's both Duplass brothers and another 115 artists to keep you inspired for a long, long time. It's an amazing deal because you can go deep into our archives, watch the shows as many times as you want, and see them on any device. Check it out at offcamera.com. I want to thank everyone that worked on the show today. We can't make a show without these people. Crawford Shippey, Michaela Galvin, Nathan Shields, Laura Kemper, Amy Jones, Cara Johnson, Justin Kennedy, and our trusty errand boy, Matt Davidson. It takes a lot of effort from a lot of people to make this show. And mostly thank you to the listeners for tuning in each time. And please, don't be shy. If you love the show, get on your social media and talk about us. Tell your friends, point them in the right direction. And if you want to talk at us, we are OffCameraShow at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I'm Sam Jones at Twitter and Sam Jones Pictures at Instagram. Or drop me an email. Tell me what's on your mind. Give me a guest suggestion. Or just send me a recipe. I'm Sam at OffCamera.com. And whatever you do, make sure to tune in next week when I sit down with actor, writer, director, producer, and the voice of the world's dumbest chicken, Alan Tudyk.
Whenever I had a drama teacher, speech teacher, I'd say, hey, so were you ever an actor? Yes, I was. What happened? Well, I did a few plays, I did this, I did that, and then I got married. And it would always end there. They would always say, if you just work and you make a living your whole life, you're a huge success. So, A, you can't get married, and B, you're poor.
He's been making us laugh on screen for nearly two decades in films like Dodgeball, 28 Days, Death at a Funeral, and Rogue One. He's been even more prolific off-screen as a one-man cast of thousands in every Disney animated film you've seen in the last 5 years. As successful as he's been, Alan says his career never really took the turn that he'd hoped. That is, until he took a major leap. Against advice and tall odds, he dropped out of pilot seasons to write his television show Con Man, and turn to the very fans it might offend to fund it. If you're inspired by life-changing tales of artistic risk, this is a conversation you don't want to miss. See you next time, off camera.